And what am I going to do?
I think you're going to do what you usually do. You're going to get yourself all worked up, then you're going to let it all out, and you're going to embarrass everybody concerned.
I don't do that.
Yes, you do that, Phyllis.
No, Mother did that.
Phyllis, I don't know your mother.
So you think I do that?
Yes, I do, Phyllis.
You don't know me at all. But it's amazing how well you know my mother.
Can turn the world on with her smile. Who can take a nothing day and suddenly make it all seem worthwhile? Well, it's you, girl, and you should know it. With each glance and every little movement you show,
you are listening to Gayest Episode Ever, the podcast that looks at episodes of classic sitcoms that deal with LGBT issues, which is to say the very special episodes that also happen to be very gay episodes. I'm Drew Mackey.
I'm Glenn Lakin.
And in case that intro didn't tip you off, today we are talking about the Mary Tyler Moore Show, specifically the episode My Brother's Keeper, aka Mary and Rhoda Meet a Homo, which aired January 13th, 1973, about halfway through the show's third season. And before we get into the episode, I want to introduce our special guest, Sam Pancake. Hi, Sam.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Glenn and Drew.
Thank you for coming here. Sam Pancake, you are an acting person, and you happen to have been on a ton of TV shows, including a lot of TV shows we're probably eventually going to talk about on this show.
Yeah.
Where do people, like when people randomly recognize you on the street, where do they recognize you from usually?
Oh, wow. Well, thanks to Friends being on Netflix now, and even before that, because it's always been in syndication, I only did two episodes of Friends, and I just played a waiter, but people clock me on it. And then for some reason, I was in about three episodes of Arrested Development as this one character.
Barry Spangler.
Barry Zuckerkorn was my boss. My
Alan name, Spangler. Oh, I'm so.
Yes, that was me, I think.
Yes, oh my
yes,
God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know that I Henry was Barry Zuckerkorn, and you, the lawyer, and I play his assistant. But like for some reason, it happened to me again 2 weeks ago. Straight white guys who are baristas at Starbucks and coffee places always know me from Arrested Development and know the lines of the character.
I can see that.
And then there's like other like so much random shit. I'm just happy when people don't say, how do I know you? Where do I know you from? People don't do that as much anymore because most people know about IMDb.
Right. Well, you've been on a great many TV shows, and I made a curated list of the TV shows that I thought merited a quick mention of your vast TV filmography.
Wow.
First of all, your first TV appearance was Wings.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Glenn and I both actually unabashedly love Wings. I actually
really?
Think it's a really solid sitcom, and I think it gets like treated like it's less than it is. I think it's actually pretty solidly written and acted.
Okay. But apparently when I was talking about Wings for the Cheers episode, I wasn't as glowing for that.
Right. But
I just don't think Cheers is Wings is in the Cheers universe, not the Frasier verse. That is my only.
Wait, is Wings a spinoff of Cheers?
Yes, kind of.
It wasn't a spinoff of Cheers, but since it took place in Nantucket, they used that proximity to Boston to have at least one crossover. Was it the only crossover?
Frasier and Lilith?
Yeah.
I think so.
So there's a Frasier and Lilith episode of Wings.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember when I did it, it was my first line on a sitcom on TV. I'd done a lot of commercials, but no actual sitcoms. And it hadn't started yet. And it was in April of 19. I remember I shot it, I think, in, I don't remember, 89 or 90. I just remember it was the Laverne and Shirley stage that someone pointed out to me.
Oh,
stage 19 at Paramount.
That's crazy.
Was it haunted?
There was an earthquake that happened that week. And we all ran outside the stage. Crystal Bernard and Tim and Steve Weber, who I'm still friendly with. Yeah, so we didn't know what the show was, and then later I didn't watch it. But it's on Netflix too, apparently, because people will send me screenshots a lot recently of me with all this like innocence and long curly brown hair just like bopping along with a garment bag, I guess.
And what year was that? Do you remember?
We shot it in like March or April of 90, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But then it was on in the fall, I guess. I don't know. But that's my memory.
There are Wings fans out there. There are people who appreciate why Wings was important. So,
absolutely.
What do you call those people?
They've written me. Wingmen?
That's a good one.
Wing people? Wing persons?
Wing nuts.
Wing nuts.
Oh, my God.
Honestly, wing nuts. Yeah.
Wings nuts.
I don't know. As a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, that has a different meaning for me.
It can be two things. Why shouldn't it? So then, in addition to Wings, there's also Angel, mm-hmm. Curb Your Enthusiasm, mm-hmm. The West Wing.
Oh, yeah.
Charmed. NYPD Blue.
Oh my God, yes.
Will and Grace.
Yeah.
Arrested Development, as you said.
Uh-huh.
Kitchen Confidential.
Uh-huh.
Fat Actress.
Oh, all right.
Push. She's making noise after I say things. Pushing Daisies.
Yes.
Parenthood.
It's like, I thought, I'm pretty, like, it's a test, like, true or false, true.
Yeah, you should have slipped some in there.
I should have slipped a fake one in here, but Cougar Town.
True.
Gilmore Girls, most recently The Mick. And
true.
Most importantly, Love Spring International.
Yeah.
Which is a show that should be on some streaming service somewhere, because I think people would think it's hilarious because it's a really great cast and it was really funny. And Catherine, you did Catherine's podcast.
Yes, right? Catherine Spires, yes.
Smart Mouth host Catherine Spires and I both love Love Spring International. And
I've never heard of this.
It was on Lifetime.
Lifetime in 2006 was trying to rebrand itself, and they decided to do original sitcoms at really late at night for some reason. And we had shot the creator Guy Shalem and Jack Plotnick, who is also on it, and Wendy McClendon Covey, currently on the Goldbergs, shot a 20-minute pilot in like 04 about this dating service, and also Jennifer Lee Cox, who was in it. And they shopped it around, and eventually Eric McCormack of Will and Grace fame, his production entity at the time, picked it up, and then they sold it to Lifetime. And it was going to be a improvised sitcom about a dating service. And this all took place when I was on Kitchen Confidential.
Oh, wow.
And even though I just remember that year was like, I wasn't official series regular in Kitchen Confidential because I was recurring, because that's how they fuck you on the money. Right. But I was in every episode. And then when I was doing that, this all went down. And so after that got canceled, I went right into Love Spring like 2 months later, which was great. And I was it was a great couple of years. So they put it on, they took off on Lifetime. They took out just one of their 8 billion Golden Girls reruns a week on Lifetime on a Monday night and put us on, and they still got letters. And it was groundbreaking. We improvised the entire thing. There were script outlines. Jane Lynch, in the pilot we shot, was someone different, but Jane Lynch came in as the head, and she was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And we had really, really interesting guest stars like Alanis Morissette and Mike Hitchcock, who was in all the Christopher Guest movies, and and Cameron Manheim, and Sean Hayes. Sean did it because of Eric, and Sean and I are friends. And Eric McCormack was a guest star, and there are a lot more now. I can't think of who they are, but it was only on for 13 episodes, but it has quite a cult following, but it's not streaming. And then someone else wrote the other day, like, they should revive this. And I'm like, I'm game. If Wendy has time, Wendy and Jane have time, I'm game.
So you heard it here first, letter writing campaign. Yes. To revive Love Spring.
Catherine and I are going to get on that. Yeah. By the way, Jennifer Lee Cox is Jan Brady from the Brady Bunch movies.
Yeah.
Who's another major figure in our lives, and we think she's hilarious.
Yeah, so. She's the best. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good show. So we are talking about Mary Tyler Moore this episode.
We are?
Which, yes. Sam did not ever appear on, unless I'm mistaken. No.
I was not a child actor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sam, what was your experience of Mary Tyler Moore?
Well, as I told you earlier, sadly, I grew up in rural West Virginia. That's not the sad part, even though that could be sad. But we only got ABC.
Right.
Like the antenna only picked up ABC.
Right.
So I grew up on a steady, delicious, creamy diet of great things. Brady Bunch, Partridge Family, The Odd Couple, through Laverne and Shirley, Happy Days, Joni Loves Chachi, through Love Boat, Fantasy Island. That was my childhood. But we got
good.
No CBS, so I was, you know, sorely deprived of your Carol Burnett's and your Mary Tyler Moore's and your Rhoda's,
right.
Which I knew at the time, and it crushed me, it killed me. But I didn't know Mary Tyler Moore until, I mean, of course, I knew who she was, and I'd seen it occasionally. And I worshipped Cloris Leachman,
mm-hmm.
because I knew her from all these crazy TV movies she was on, and Young Frankenstein and High Anxiety. And she just always fascinated me. You know, mm-hmm. there's like, we know these certain women, just like gay guys are just like, what? And the same with, and I loved Valerie Harper. I liked when I got to see Rhoda, like at other people's houses or my grandparents, I loved it. So I didn't really know Mary that well until reruns on Nick at Night. And it's funny that we're doing this episode because I watched it for the first time last fall on Hulu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was fresh in my mind.
Do you think they might not have aired this one on Nick at Night? Not been part of the
conspiracy theory.
Well, so that does happen sometimes where certain things just don't end up going into syndication properly. But
yeah, that's true.
Glenn, what is your relationship with this classic TV show that everyone knows and loves?
I actually have no relationship with it. With all my TV watching, for some reason, this never crossed my path.
Mm-hmm. Until now, when I made
Until now. I mean, yeah. I was aware of it, and I loved Valerie Harper from Valerie's Family.
Oh, yeah.
Hogan Family. Yes.
God, it was so funny and good.
Yeah.
And Jason Bateman.
Until they murdered her.
So crazy.
Yeah.
It's fine. But I mean, I love and appreciate it. And watching it now kind of for the first time, I was stunned by like the quote unquote fag hagness of all of the ladies on it.
Yeah, it is that. And we get to talk about all the ladies and the way they appeal to gay men in various ways. But yeah, I got to say, this was not in syndication where I grew up. So I didn't ever watch these until they were available on iTunes. I actually bought the seasons of these and was like, I'm going to watch this important TV show. There are only 3 seasons that are available online. So the first 3 seasons
of
the show.
Crazy. What is that?
No idea. Someone really fucked up because the back 4 seasons are the ones that have Betty White playing Sue Ann Nivens.
Yes.
Who's like a manipulative, terrible monster. And I think the world needs to know that Betty White has this other dimension to her, but they're not in syndication. I think they're on Hulu. You can watch them illegally. But
they're not on Hulu.
Yeah, on YouTube.
You
they're
mean
on
YouTube.
They're on YouTube. Sorry. Yeah. The first 3 seasons are the ones that have Cloris Leachman and Valerie Harper. They both departed for their own spinoffs. And it's kind of weird that someone might just see these 3 seasons and think that like they never even left the show. What a fun little contained thing. But not know that like they had their own thing on the side.
And also the ending of that series was so legendary and heartbreaking. And everyone knew it at the time. The famous thing where they all like scooch out the door together.
Mm-hmm. In my defense, I didn't watch Mary Tyler Moore growing up, but I have seen like every episode of Monsters Today.
That's not a defense at all.
Monsters Today?
Monsters Today.
Oh, Monsters Today? Mm-hmm. How long is that? Oh, the syndicated one?
Yeah, it's like 3 seasons, 3 or 4 seasons.
Longer than you would think, but that was like a thing where they were trying to, we're going to update the Munsters and make them like cool again. Yeah.
Who were the Lily and Herman on that one? Was it Ed Herman?
No.
I think
it was.
Was this the Canadian-ish one?
So
Lee Merriweather.
Lily Munster.
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
I don't care about Marilyn.
Jason Marsden is Eddie.
Oh,
but like Lee Merriweather's a person.
Oh yeah,
Lee Merriweather.
She's Catwoman. Yeah. She's lovely. Yeah.
She's
gorgeous.
One of the 3 Catwomen.
Yes.
We can fight about which one's the best. On a
Lee Merriweather.
Show. Okay, there you go.
Maybe this is the time for me to super hardcore name drop that I have fulfilled one of my small fantasies by I've either worked with or crossed paths with so far: Ed Asner, Cloris Leachman, Georgia Engel, Betty White, Gavin McLeod.
That's a really good lineup.
Yeah.
Why don't you rattle through those in order?
Betty White I've met a couple times at work, most auspiciously, I mean, through work, we haven't worked together, but most auspiciously backstage at the Emmys in 2010. Check my my upcoming autobiography for the details. Okay. Secondly, Cloris Leachman, I met at a book signing in Palm Springs. You need to read her autobiography, especially her explaining and describing some of her crazy behavior on the Mary Tyler Moore set, especially being late and how she didn't really understand that being late was bad. She grabbed my chin so hard for the photo op that we did this at this little thing that it really hurt. And then one time I went for an audition at Raising Hope and she came out in the lobby and went to each one of us that were sitting in the waiting room, all the actors, and made us read our lines to her. And she was like, she gave me a nice compliment. Some of the other people, I didn't end up booking
it. I love your chin.
Right. I want to grab it again. Gavin McLeod, I was in a movie called Cook Off With, which is online now, which Wendy McLennan Covey's also in.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And Guy Shalem from Love Spring directed it. And it's been re-edited and re-released, and it's a whole long story. But I spent like a week or two with Gavin, and he's absolutely lovely. Mm-hmm. So kind. Very kind. And Ed Asner, I did the benefit with, and he was really nice. And he's alarmingly strong for a man in his 80s.
That sounds right.
Yeah. He's very strong.
Yeah.
And physically, I mean, as well as, you know, as a person. And then who am I leaving out?
Georgia Engel.
Georgia Engel. I did this independent pilot that my friend wrote and produced, and she played my friend's mom, and I played her best friend.
Okay.
And she was a delight. she's Georgette.
That would make sense. I mean, she essentially has played a variation on Georgette in most of her other sitcom roles. Glenn is like, where do I know her from? I was like, oh, she was on Coach. She played a character named Shirley Burley.
Oh, really?
And she is very, she was Luther Van Dyke's girlfriend on that show. And she was like, she's not
Jerry Van Dyke?
Jerry Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Did I say?
Luther Van Dyke. Who's Luther Van Dyke?
Well, his character's name is Luther.
His character.
Oh, and I've never seen it.
Oh, it's actually.
I'm way older than you people. I was like getting high and going to clubs when you were watching Coach.
Okay, you're
in the
much,
90s.
Yeah.
So like last night.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
That's much better use of your time. But she's interesting. Like we can talk
and
about.
She's on Everybody Loves Raymond too, right? Wasn't she one of the parents?
Yeah, that is also where I know
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't watch that
I'm
show.
Actually an Everybody Loves Raymond apologist.
Are you a Patricia Heaton apologist?
No.
Okay.
That's Terry Schiavo sort of.
We can talk about Terry Schiavo again. Two episodes. Okay, no.
We need to not. This is not the Terry Schiavo podcast.
Oh, it's Terry Schiavo coming up.
She wanted Terry Schiavo to not be unplugged.
Yeah.
Patricia Heaton did because she's like a crazy Catholic.
Waved a Mylar balloon in front of her and said, look, there's life.
Yeah.
That's so please, weird because at one version of that pilot I'm talking about with Georgia Engel, Patty Heaton played the mom on. And eventually she didn't. I did a table read with her. That's why I get to call her Patty.
She didn't want to pull the plug on you either.
No, she didn't. She was very nice.
The episode we're talking about today is called My Brother's Keeper, and it originally aired January
13th, 1973. 73? Oh, wow. 73. Wow, I always thought 76.
At the time, Mary Tyler Moore Show was the seventh highest rated series on TV.
That's a crime.
Tied with Gunsmoke.
Seventh?
Wow. Seventh. Okay, so here's the weird thing. The show that aired, there was a show that aired on the same night as Mary Tyler Moore that actually was better rated, and it was called Bridget Loves Bernie.
Bridget Loves Bernie.
You know about this.
Meredith Baxter Bernie and David Bernie.
Have you ever heard of the show?
No, wow. Is it streaming?
I doubt it. I don't believe so. So
that's interesting that got a higher, it must have been new or something.
I had no idea she had a life before Family Ties.
So this is how she met.
Okay, I need to tell you about another really great TV movie from the 70s called The Cat Creature, about an ancient Egyptian cat.
Oh
curse.
My God, this is like reuniting all my loves, ancient Egyptian culture, cat people, and Meredith Baxter.
Okay, Brady. You have such a treat waiting for you on YouTube tonight, Glenn Lakin. I'm not even kidding.
Okay.
That's another one. I'm going to make a list of really good, bad TV movies from the 70s children to watch.
You should have a podcast where you make people watch bad TV movies on YouTube and then just talk about them. And I would listen to that podcast. Yep.
I would. Okay.
Yeah. Please do that.
Oh my God. I have so many.
So this is
Cat Creature. Write it down.
Bridget Loves Bernie is where she got her last name, Bernie. Although it's confusing because it's Bernie, B-E-R-N.
B-I-R-N-E-Y.
But like the show is Bridget Loves Bernie.
It's very confusing.
And so Bernie was a Jewish guy who was played by someone whose last name was Bernie, B-I-R-N-Y. And Meredith played a Catholic girl and people loved it. It got really good ratings, got better ratings than Mary Tyler Moore. But people complained so much about
the mixed marriage,
the way Jewish people were depicted,
oh, really?
That it became too much of a headache for the network and they canceled it. And if what I looked up was true, it is the highest rated show to ever be canceled after one season.
Wow.
Better ratings than Mary Tyler Moore. And they canned it because it was just too much of a fucking headache. Someone got arrested at one point for
I had no idea.
Death threats or something. However, as a result of it, Meredith Baxter married Bernie, the actor who played her husband.
David
and that's
Bernie.
How she got her last name.
Yeah.
And although that marriage did not last, if I understand correctly.
I wonder why. Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Well, was on Family. Do you know the show Family with Seda Thompson and James Broderick, who's Matthew Broderick's father, and Quinn Cummings?
I don't know.
And Christine McNichol. Oh, my God, y'all.
Christine McNichol, I know.
Look up Family.
Is that why Christine
McNichol? It won Emmys.
Is that why Christine McNichol is gay, too?
Because
Meredith Baxter
Bernie. She was the sister of Meredith Baxter Bernie.
Yeah, is that why?
They must have kissed.
Yeah. Oh, probably.
No, they were sisters.
They must have kissed.
Oh my God, you guys, stop it. Look up Family. It was a stalwart in my family's TV watching. It ran for like 5 or 6 years. And Seda Thompson was the mom and James Broderick was the dad. It was set in Pasadena. And Christine McNichol, Gary Frank was his name, this kind of life one blonde man. And then Meredith Baxter Bernie. It was like the trials and it's so funny. TV was so extremely white. And of course we didn't question it.
Right.
But except for, you know, the Jeffersons and Good Times and That's My Mama. But overwhelmingly the problems of the middle class white, upper middle class whites were so like, there's 1 hour family dramas, so many of them in the 70s and early 80s.
And that's still
a lot.
That's still most of TV, but
yeah.
even though Bridget Loves Bernie was not something I knew about before I did the research for this episode, the lineup that this aired on for Saturday nights on CBS was All in the Family, Bridget Loves Bernie, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, Carol Burnett. I'm like, that is 3 solid fucking hours of TV. I would stay home on a Saturday to watch that.
Oh, Mary Tyler Moore was after on the same network as Bridget Loves Bernie.
It was so...
It was also CBS is what you're saying.
It was the 9 p.m. show.
Okay. I thought it was against Mary Tyler Moore and it beat Mary Tyler Moore.
No, no.
It was the same night, but it still beat in terms of the ratings. Got it.
Yeah. So this episode was directed by Jay Sandrich, who is a prolific TV director who did a ton of Mary Tyler Moore. And also Get Smart, The Odd Couple, Soap, and then over 100 episodes of that sitcom that was on where Felicia Rashad played a mom. I can't remember the name.
I don't know it.
Yeah. Beep.
It was written by this awesome writing pair, Jenna McMahon and Dick Clare, who later go on to create both Facts of Life and Mama's Family. Dick Clare, by the way, was a gay and kind of a babe. Like, kind
I
of.
I didn't
a...
know that.
Okay, let me. Okay, let's see the picture.
I've seen those names so many times.
Oh, well, you'll show me later.
He sadly passed away from age-related causes in 1988.
Oh yes, not bad, Mr. Clare.
Yeah.
I'm gonna dig into that further.
Yeah. So,
He could get it. He could get it.
And his Jenna McMahon is. She did a lot of cool stuff. They wrote for Carol Burnett together as well. So this episode opens up with Mary at work and Murray comes in and sits down next to her. And I feel like I want to start off this episode with a talk about Murray Slaughter. Murray Slaughter is Mary's coworker, played by Gavin McLeod, which is a great stage name. But I will say right now, when I picture what a Gavin McLeod looks like in my head, he does not look like Murray Slaughter. Looks like a very different man. Looks like a soap opera villain who's still handsome or something. But that's what he is. He's kind of gay, right? Like his character, Murray Slaughter's character, has a gayness to it, right?
Well, in hindsight, yes. Like, it never struck me at the time, and I was, as a kid, like, always on high alert for the faintest whiff of gay.
Right.
So I could be like, because it, of course, interested me, like, who's that? What's going on? Because I knew when I was, like, you know, 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
Or I would be like, I have to remember not to like that or say something about their comment so I'm not, like, busted or someone says, like, that person's like you.
Right. But he's, like, one of those sloppy gays where, like, he's not out and he's not trying to land a lady in any real way. So
Married to Marie, which is always funny to me that their names are Murray and Marie.
And basically the same Murray name. Murray and the co-workers Mary.
Oh, that's true. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mary and Murray. Yeah. And Marie.
And they sit right next to each other.
Think a little harder on the names there, Jay Sandrich. I mean, Dick and Jenna.
They're like bitchy work friends, though. And it's hard for me to describe why I perceive this character to be gay. Because, like, in practice, he kind of reminds me of Pete Hornberger from 30 Rock. But, like, a gay version of him, even though he's not actually gay on the show. And, like, there's a lot of episodes that deal with his wife. And, like, he almost has an affair in one episode. Like, he has a whole marital thing going on. He has kids.
Yeah.
And I cannot not see Mary's coworker as being a queenie gay character. And the only thing I could think of is that in practice, he kind of functions like a male version of Rhoda, since they both have like a New York accent and they're both like quippy and like frumpy and kind of concerned about
their weight, even though Rhoda Valerie Harper couldn't be more slim and more slimmer, more beautiful.
Right.
But like, Gavin was heavier then.
Right.
And then by the time he was Captain Stubing on the Love Boat, which was a big part of my childish childhood later years, that was the Gavin McLeod that I knew. And he was like sold on that show as a sex symbol, which if you can believe that, because he was a commanding captain and he like always had lady friends and lovers and it was odd. And the women competed to be at the captain's table with him.
The episode is paused right now on his screen credit. Right. And it's a picture of him like eating a pork rind and drinking. And I'm not
mouth open.
I'm not seeing sex symbol. I'm not seeing gay icon. I didn't pick up on the homosexual vibe. But he was also in this episode for all of like 2 seconds.
Right. I've seen more of it. It's odd. And it's also maybe compounded by the fact that I was like, wait, is this guy gay or something? I looked up that he is an evangelical Christian who divorced his wife and then remarried his wife and has
Patty with an I.
Patty with an I and spent most of his life post Love Boat, really. He still does do acting stuff and he does like Hollywood stuff, but a lot of his energies are focused on evangelical Christianity now. And I was like,
great.
There's some things I can tell you and I'll tell you later.
Okay, great. But like, so the show is centered on Mary and everyone is showed in mostly how they interact with Mary. And a lot of the men have, like, Ed Asner's character, Lou Grant, is her gruff-talking boss. But even then, I think like there's like a quippy, like grumpy old gay vibe to him. And I know he has a wife, at least until he gets divorced at one point. But like the relationship he has with Mary is not quite what I think of as typical straight male, straight female relationship.
Well, later in the series, they go on a date. They finally are like, after he divorces, and they kiss and they start laughing. And it's the best. It's a really good episode and a really good depiction, because I've kind of been in that thing with a friend or the circumstances change and you're both like, wait, maybe we should. It's kind of been a while, and you kind of try it and then you start to make out and then you start laughing. That's legitimately happened to me. And you're like, this is just friends, you know, and it's a really cute episode. So, but I don't think Lou reads remotely gay.
Is it just because
maybe think you're dreaming there about your fucking bear daddy?
Is it just because it's a completely sexless relationship? You're just like, oh, that Reed is gay.
Maybe that's it. Because there is, like, except for that episode where they do go on the date, there is not sexual tension between her and Lou and her and Murray or her and Ted, because Ted is a vain idiot. When, again, maybe it's living amongst gay men, I know a lot of vain idiots.
Why'd you look at me?
Living with you, I'm amongst a gay idiot.
I was talking about you. You're both very vain people.
Just, exactly. I'm an egomaniac. Okay.
Anyway, so maybe I'm overreaching on that one, but the episode picks up very quickly because Phyllis shows up. Phyllis visits Mary at work, and Phyllis is my favorite character on this show.
I want you to come because...
Huh? Hi, Phyllis. Hi. Lou, I'd love to talk to you too, but I'm here to see Mary.
Well, if I'm in the way, I could wait out on the window ledge.
Sorry, excuse us. Yeah. Window ledge, he's such a cutie. Phyllis, is something the matter?
Oh, well, actually, I'm on my way to the airport, but let's talk of other things. Mary, that is a nice dress for work. What are you going to change into when you get home from work tonight?
Oh, I don't know, Phil. I might just live recklessly and stay right in this one.
Oh, no.
What is this?
No, that won't do at all. Mary, please change it. But you will be in about 7.
Yeah, I think I will. Phyllis, look, this is an office. I can't just stand around and chat. I got a lot of work to do here. I got to get out my party invitations. Here's yours.
Well, thank you. Oh, Lars will be at some big dermatologist bash. But could I bring somebody else?
Yeah, sure. Who?
Oh, Mary, how you ferret things out. Well, I'll confess, I have a surprise. And I've been looking forward all week to your meeting this surprise.
Oh.
Okay, I'll say this much. The surprise is a person. My plan was to bring this person by your place tonight, just casually.
Oh, that's right. Your brother is getting into town today.
Who spoiled my surprise?
Well, Phil, you told me 4 times.
I spoiled my surprise.
I guess.
Oh, Mary, you'll adore him. He's just like me.
Phyllis is one of my favorite characters of all time.
She's amazing.
Of all time. And even though I only knew her a little bit in the 70s from what little of the show I saw, I still worshipped her. And I remember just being so sad that we didn't get Phyllis on ABC or where I lived. But like, I think a lot of my gay sense of humor and sometimes my bitchy ethos has been based on Phyllis and women like her. Like,
right.
I still think she's, and just the way Cloris Leachman plays her so perfectly and so delicately, the body language, her movements, her just that she's a bit more arch than the rest of them. So it sort of is like, does Phyllis know what she's up to? But she doesn't know what she's up to because she's truly just, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Where like it's not Cloris Leachman commenting on the character. She's fully playing the character, yet she's just a teensy bit more stylized than everyone else. Yeah. You know,
she struck me as someone who's, I mean, she's still in the show, but she's also in her own show.
Exactly. Yes.
She plays like, it's over the top, but it's also more subtle. Like, there's more going on with her body movements, with where she's looking.
Yes, yeah.
And so, like, the character doesn't come off as, like, cookie cutter.
No, right. At all.
Right. I like that she's so petty and passive aggressive and manipulative and needy, but like refusing to admit to any of her faults. And yet they also made her very stylish. And in another showrunner's hands, that character would have been an unattractive older woman. And they,
like a real shrew.
Right.
Yeah.
And they,
but
they,
Phyllis is glamorous with her hair pulled back and her long tendrils down her shoulders and her chic outfits. Yeah.
All of her outfits in this episode are amazing. And at one point she comes into the room dressed in like just brown. She's just like wearing this like simple brown gown.
It looks like she walked through a curtain and it got stuck on her and she comes into the room.
It almost looks like she walked through the chocolate fountain at Willy Wonka and it just dribbled over her and this gorgeous polyester brown pantsuit came about.
That's
also when she comes back in after she thinks that Rhoda has gone out with her husband, her brother Ben, and she's wearing basically a very chic funeral shroud.
Yeah.
Black, slightly ruffled, very, very plain long sleeves. Plain and yet ruffled. That doesn't really happen. But if you see the outfit, you know what I mean. It is plain and yet it is ruffled. It is very Phyllis.
We can post a screen. We won't. We'll stop. We'll stop talking about outfits at like.
No, we will not. Here,
but, that's why I'm here.
So she looks like Glenn. Do you know the character from Batman Silver St. Cloud?
Yes.
She looks and dresses like Silver St. Cloud. Silver St. Cloud is this like, she's a prematurely gray beauty that like Bruce Wayne dates in the 70s. In the 70s, right?
I think late
70s. What a great name. I don't know this. I'm not a big superhero person, so but that sounds like an amazing woman.
All
character.
Of Bruce Wayne's girlfriends have soap opera villain names, like Silver St. Cloud, Sasha Bordeaux.
Vicky Vale, I know that
Vicky
one.
Vicky Vale, yeah. he has some good ones in there.
What was the Nicole Kidman character's name when in that version of
Dr.
Batman?
Dr. Chase Meridian.
Oh, really? That's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
So that movie is about him.
It's like from Soap Dish or something.
That movie is about him trying to find the balance in his life between being Bruce and being Batman. So he's literally trying to
chase the Meridian.
Chase the Meridian.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh.
Is that Val Kilmer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not Clooney.
No. I prefer to think about it as that's the Nicole Kidman Batman movie. But
fair enough.
Know. So Phyllis, who is lovely and beautiful. And if you've only ever seen her in Young Frankenstein or Facts of Life, like, please look her up on this show because.
Or Raising Hope.
Raising
for the
Hope.
Kids.
You'd be shocked at how absolutely glamorous she looks like. She looks like a fucking doll. She is waltzing into Mary's office and being annoying.
And Mary, wait till you hear him play. He's a musical genius.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
An absolute genius. He's a composer.
Oh, what's he written?
Commercials. Television commercials, where they use large symphony orchestras. There's no question, you know, that if Bach were alive today, he would be doing television.
That's what they say about Ted.
Because she wants them to either fuck or get married. Probably get married.
Get married.
Get married.
Yeah.
Although there was a lovely joke from Mary where she points out that she has not saved herself.
It's just that from the moment you moved into our building, I was thinking to myself, Ben would love Mary. And then, of course, you're both unmarried. Seems as if you've been saved for each other.
Well, Phil, I'm not all that saved.
Which is like a weirdly, for 1973, is a weird.
Well, when that show started, I remember this, which I think it started in 70 or 71. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the, it was the first time a woman who was a single woman who was not a virgin and she had, it was implied that she, men slept over, that mm-hmm. she was having sex with men. She was a single. And that was a big, huge deal because that girl was certainly a virgin. And, you know, I don't remember. And Julia, the Diane Carroll show was like her husband had died. She was a widow. Mm-hmm. But like the fact that she was a single woman, left, you know, she doesn't marry the guy. That's where how it starts. I think she leaves.
It's a broken engagement.
Broken engagement. Not a divorce or a widow or death situation. And that was a big deal back then. So yeah, I think that's what she's referring to.
She's going to take it after all.
That's right. Yeah. Just like you, Glenn. Just like you.
My initial thought was like, that can't be what I think it means, but that is definitely what it actually means. So I always want to write off older stuff as being like, oh, they wouldn't have made that joke. They totally fucking did make that joke.
Mm-hmm.
It is weird that like one of Phyllis's selling points on her brother is he's just like me. And it's like, do you want to have sex with Mary? Do you want to be with Mary? Because her life is obviously very unfulfilling because Lars sucks. Her husband
doesn't exist.
He may not exist.
We never see him.
Yeah. He's an orthodontist or a dentist or something.
And dermatologist.
Dermatologist. Thank you.
He went to a big dermatologist mm-hmm. bash. That's why he's not there.
That sounds like the worst bash, but yeah. And Mary is reluctant.
Well, also, it's Phyllis's vanity because she's saying he's so amazing. He's an incredibly wonderful person. He's just like me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's her vanity.
And I think that's the end of the first scene. And when it cuts to the next scene, it's already Phil bringing Ben over to meet Mary at her apartment.
And he is not cute.
I thought he was okay. He's like, the level of like attractiveness from men on this show is like nowhere near what it is for
women. It's Ed Asner.
No, yeah. Right?
I think it's so actually true. Ted Baxter's the best looking guy on the show.
Until Gordy, the sportscaster guy, Gordy. He's
the weatherman. The
weather guy.
Yeah.
He's very hot.
Yeah. But then he left to do Good Times, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because is it John Amos?
Yeah.
Who I'm in love with and always was and still am.
Genuinely attractive. But like the white men on the show just kind of look like mashed potatoes.
Yeah, I wonder if that was, it just occurred to me now, if that was ever a conscious choice to put her, this young, beautiful, attractive single woman in the workforce in a place with people you wouldn't expect her in TV land in the 1970s to date. So right. You could just have a lot of, because otherwise there'd be an instant like office romance and a moonlighting situation of like, will they, won't they, or Cheers or whatever. But like to have all these men be unattractive to her. Maybe that was a part of the show because she's no end of like guys she's dating and everything.
It gives her a reason to like reach out to other characters and find new men that she actually might want to have sex with.
But that's not an excuse for Ben being ugly.
I didn't think he was ugly.
Way to bring it back.
I thought he was decent looking.
It's interesting. He's an interesting choice because I remember one of my hobbies has always been like actors and like actors from TV in the 60s and 70s. And I just like, knowing people's backgrounds, and I worked in casting for in the 90s as my day job just because I happened to be good at like remembering actors and stuff. But he was someone I had no idea who he was. I don't know what else he's done. You know, it's like on Golden Girls or a lot of those shows, you see these people you've seen a million times on everything, right. Which I just realized I have become one of those people.
Yeah.
Which is fine by me.
Yeah.
If I can't be a star, I'll be, you know, just like Kathleen Freeman or someone. If you don't know who that is, Google her. But he is not someone I was familiar with at all. And what an interesting kind of like bland choice. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. After meeting Phyllis, I expected fucking Alucard from the Castlevania games to walk in. Like silver haired.
Right. Like a boy version
like
of her.
Embroidered collar, something. Just like to or float in on this.
Angular, you know. Right. Like because
Phyllis looks like Nordic and he looks like, he's like a schlubby guy. He looks like, what?
He looks like he just lost his job at like... the bank, and he's been drinking in a bar since 2 p.m. And like the sunlight hits him, and his eyes just bulge.
Clint's a tough customer.
You guys are gonna feel so bad about everything you just said because he
dead.
Robert Moore, he's mostly a director. He did a lot of acting, but he's better known as a director. He directed the original stage version of The Boys in the Band.
Oh my god, that's who that is?
Robert Moore.
I was dreaming about him in relation to the new production. Oh my God, we're such assholes.
Okay, well, keep going.
You're really the asshole. I just said he didn't look like Phyllis.
You didn't stop me.
I wasn't going to interrupt you. He was also the director of Murder by Death.
Oh my God, that's one of my favorite movies from the 70s. You're blowing my mind. How did I not know this?
Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, it's really good. It's basically Clue before Clue was a thing, but it's funnier than Clue.
I thought Last of Sheila was Clue before Clue was a thing.
This is even more so. It is like Truman Capote's an actor. Nancy Walker, who plays Rhoda's mom, is an actor in it.
It's all based on the famous... I'm jumping in. Murder by Death is one of my favorite movies in the 70s. It's weird that Cloris wasn't in it because it's like the Eileen Brennans.
She would have been Eileen Brennan.
Yeah.
If she was anything.
But it's like a spoof. It's written by Neil Simon, who normally I don't like his work, but it's actually, it makes no goddamn sense. But it's all these like a version of Nick and Nora Charles, the Thin Man people with Maggie Smith and David Niven. Maggie Smith, I still quote that movie to this day.
The line about, what is it? The sex with dead people?
Yeah, no, it's like, why would anyone want a dead, naked body? And David Niven whispers in her ear something like, to fuck it or whatever. And she goes, oh, that's tacky.
That's really tacky. It's so good. So my boyfriend, Dan, this is one of his favorite movies when he was a little kid. I was like, yes, that makes perfect sense that this would be the movie you would have latched onto.
Wow. Only I think I like your boyfriend. Have I met him? Maybe I should. Because it was one of my favorites too, if not my favorite. But also, it's got this upsettingly, and Asian people are out there going like, what about the terrible thing with Peter Sellers playing Sidney Wang, the Charlie Chan character, which is pretty upsetting in terms of Asian, bad Asian stereotypes. But the whole movie is such a crazy spoof anyway.
It's bizarre. It's like, it's bonkers. And
Peter Falk plays like the Humphrey Bogart, Sam Spade character, Eileen Brennan's his Moll, and Elsa Lanchester, Bride of Frankenstein, plays the Miss Marple character, the Agatha Christie, and they all come together to a house to solve a murder.
It's really good. Robert Moore has a single other notable acting credit, and that is a 1970 comedy drama called Tell Me That You Love Me, Junie Moon. So you've seen this?
Yes.
Oh, I've never seen this. I remember reading about it in like a big compendium of movie things. I'm like, oh, that's a gay movie. Okay.
Is it?
So, okay.
Maybe I don't know it.
Can I just read you? It was a play. Can I just read you the description of it from Wikipedia? This movie I have not seen.
I mean, we can't stop you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you could strike me in the face, but you're not going to.
Clint, don't.
The film stars Liza Minnelli as the title character, Junie Moon, a girl whose face is scarred in a vicious battery acid attack by her boyfriend, Ben Piazza. Later, in an institution, she meets a man with epilepsy, Ken Howard, and a gay paraplegic who uses a wheelchair, Robert Moore. Disabled but not down, they live together in an older rented house and bond, determined to prove themselves and help each other. And it's like,
that's... I have not seen that. Glenn is literally almost on the floor laughing.
Because it's such an awful set. It's like, that sounds horrible.
Can we please watch that?
It's apparently good. It has really good reviews. Liza Minnelli was praised for her performance in it.
I'm always curious I wonder how they cast that. Clearly he was a gay man who didn't mind playing a gay man, because that was a time where, like, if you played a gay person, your career was ruined. Like Chris Sarandon and when he played a trans person in
Dog Day Afternoon. Well, Robert Moore directed a ton of episodes of Rhoda after this. He also died of AIDS related.
Is that why I'm supposed to feel bad that I didn't find him attractive?
Yeah, because he did a lot of cool stuff and then he died of AIDS. So yeah, you should feel terrible about yourself.
I don't.
Okay. Well,
Glenn has no heart, ladies and gentlemen. Just a great rack on top of it, where his heart should be.
We can't see that on a podcast. It's a podcast. Just have to take Sam's word for it. Do you guys feel like Robert Moore plays his character as, on a scale of 1 to 10, how gay does he play Ben?
Should I go first?
Yeah.
I think he plays it about 10 being flaming, like Charles Nelson Reilly screaming rainbows. And 1 being, I don't know.
Ed Asner. Yeah.
He's only about a 4.
Right.
But you have to sell the joke. He can't come in flaming. He can't come in as like Rip Taylor.
Well, I mean, it depends on the scene. Because in scenes with his sister, Phyllis, he does play it like a 2.
Well, I don't know how to put it except Mary Richards, my dear friend and neighbor and all-round withered person. This is my brother, Ben. Ben, this is Mary.
Nice to meet you, Mary.
Very nice to meet you too, Ben.
I knew it. I just had a feeling.
But like the first scene we see him without her, he comes in and he's like, 4 to 5. Like, he's a little bit more fun. He's a little bit more loose.
When he's just talking to Mary as a friend, yeah.
Subsequent to that, the next scene is Ben coming back and being like, hey, I'm really sorry if I seemed rude, but, like, I just don't really appreciate my sister trying to, like, push
me. Well, you know, Phyllis has this way of manipulating people, and I got the feeling she was backing you into a corner on the whole thing.
I think she's very anxious to have us go out.
No, I think she's very anxious to have us get married.
She wants to, like, turn up the music, turn down the lights, turn down the bed, I think is his description of what he thinks that she's trying to do.
It's also the scene in which we see Mary organizing a very icebergy salad.
It's brown.
Well, it's in a brown bowl. And I remember that very specific sort of Pyrex brown bowl from the 70s.
Okay.
And so it makes the almost white lettuce look brown.
Right.
And then she says to him, do you want some dinner? And while we were watching it, we were remarking on how gorgeously thin, almost to a fault, that Mary is.
She's very skinny. Yeah.
And so that's her dinner. It's just chunks of iceberg lettuce. We know why she's so thin.
Yeah, not to get ahead of the scene, but then when Rhoda comes in and she offers like salad to Rhoda too, it's like, if I'm making dinner for myself and 2 people come in, I do not have extra
she
dinner.
She said
for
she
people.
Always makes too much. She says it in the episode, Glenn.
She's just
always makes too much. I always make too much.
She wrote to the note. You can't, okay. You're right.
I just want to make a random observation. Yeah. Watching that show, there's so much polyester. And it reminds me of the 70s and all the women around me and all the women in the world in the 70s and the men to a degree, but like so much polyester. Everything was polyester and they're all wearing so much polyester. And just the feel of it and getting hugged by it and laying on your grandmother's lap in it, it gives me a lot of sense memories. And they're mostly bad. Because of the polyester, because of the people, but it's the most, I mean, I knew it like it was wash and wear and drip dry and all that stuff. And it was the miracle fabric back then.
Right.
But it was so off-putting and just like, ugh, and like the chafing people. You look at it and I just think of chafed skin.
But it looks great.
It does look great.
Okay.
Crisp lines.
crisp lines. Mm-hmm. Really holds a pleat.
So I guess we just opted for more breathable fabrics as we progressed out of the 70s.
And also they were like, they would melt on you if you were in a fire.
And everyone was smoking back then, so you think they would have happened a lot, right?
I think it did. I remember they would melt. Someone would drop an ash on theirs and just like make this little melt circle. I had some of them. I like to set things on fire. Continue.
Okay. So, yeah, Ben comes in to apologize for being rude. And then Rhoda also... Actually, no, before Rhoda comes in, they have this very interesting conversation about like what kind of questions people ask of you to get information about you.
Are you gay?
Which is not on the table, but yeah, talking about how everyone just wants to find out if you're married or not. And that's...
Did you and Phyllis meet each other in college?
No, it was after.
Oh, I thought you could have been a freshman when she was a senior.
Hey, are you trying to find out how old I am?
I guess so. I'm sorry. I hate it when people do that to me. I mean, why don't they come right out and ask?
Exactly. You want to know something? Just ask it.
Okay, how old are you?
I don't want to tell you. I'm 32.
Thanks.
It's like, you're only 32 years old.
Is it, who did, Mary?
Mary's yeah. 32.
Oh, ish, okay.
This
all right,
seems
wow.
like so young. It's because Mary Tyler Moore has always looked like a grown-up to me. And it's like,
she looks like, she seems like she's 40. Right.
Because yeah. she was 18 right. when she was married to Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah. And then they talk about how people should just come out and ask. And then, of course, Rhoda immediately waltzes in.
Have you also noticed that if people want to know if you're married, they never ask straight out?
Oh, no.
Hi, kids.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you had a date.
No, come on in. It's all right. Not a date. Rhoda, Morgan Stern, I'd like you to meet Ben Sutherland. Rhoda lives in the apartment upstairs.
Hi.
Hiya, Ben. Why don't you sit down? He married?
But just also when Ben says to Rhoda, do you like music? And she goes, not really. And it's just kind of like, and they kind of pick it up later about because he's going to take her to the symphony.
Right.
But it's sort of like, who doesn't like some kind of music?
Rhoda.
It's so random. I know it has to serve the storyline. And she just does it so well. And she's not trying to be funny. And it sounds like she's just mm-hmm. being a person in the room. And it's, oh God, it's so good. She's really good. I love watching Rhoda on her.
Why not show the man how direct a person I can be?
Did I tell you that Ben is Phyllis's brother?
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Phyllis is Ben?
It's funny. Phyllis never mentioned you to me.
Yeah, funny. So what do you do, Ben?
I'm a musician.
Oh.
I play the piano, compose a little. Are you interested in music?
Not really.
The weird thing about this episode is that it turns out Ben is gay. And it's not something you find out until like the last moment of the episode. And they use it like a surprise laugh, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that and watching this scene, Ben obviously picks Rhoda as the person he relates to more over Mary. Is it because Rhoda makes a better fag hag
yes.
than Mary does? Either of them could be fun to hang out with at a bar, right?
Sure.
But he picks Rhoda. Rhoda's the one he thinks is more fun.
Well, isn't he live in New York and she's from the Bronx
right.
and he talks about New York and she's like the cool Jewish chicks who he's friends with in New York in mm-hmm. the village or whatever. And they just kind of spark it more. And she's like, it's also that like, I'm sorry to say this, kind of stereotypical fag thing. It's like she's trying harder to make him like her.
Right.
That girls do, some certain women do or have historically done around men, gay men and straight men,
mm-hmm.
because of the patriarchy and all that shit, but or whatever reasons. So they, you know, they do have more of a spark, and she's funnier than Mary. I mean, like, we're seeing
funny.
Rhoda as the sassy smart mouth. Also, it's gonna fuck up Phyllis more if
right.
he likes Rhoda, which I'm sure he enjoys.
I would actually think he chose her because it would fuck Phyllis less, because if he like hangs out with Mary, Phyllis gets all these like ideas in her head.
Oh, I thought you meant fuck Phyllis. I meant fuck Phyllis and like fuck her. I'm sick of my sister.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So different motivations for fucking Phyllis. But yeah, the thing is that like he's heard all about Mary, but when he meets Rhoda, he's like, Phyllis never mentioned you. She's like, that's weird. Phyllis hates Rhoda. Phyllis finds Rhoda to be absolutely objectionable. And we get to that in the next scene when Ben and Rhoda run off to the concert together, and the scene opens with Mary in her bathrobe, and it's basically a monologue, and Cloris Leachman delivers it impeccably, explaining the events of the concert when she heard people coming in late and thought they were boors, I think is the
boors,
word.
Boors, I call
boors.
Them.
And she sees it's Ben.
Hi! How's the concert? Phyllis?
Perhaps it would be best to tell it as it happened. chronologically, from my point of view, I am still in shock. Lars and I were sitting enjoying one of Mozart's more lighthearted moments, flutes, the coming of spring, something, I don't know. There was this commotion in the aisle. Late arrivals, boors, I thought. I turned to give them a good glare. It was Ben. I was so pleased. He and Mary, I thought, have come to join us.
Oh, well, no.
Then I saw it was not Mary. It was...
Rhoda.
Rhoda.
Right.
Well, then they sat next to us. I struggled to maintain my poise, though my senses were reeling. I tried to enjoy the concert, even though she was snapping her fingers to Mozart.
Phyllis is physically revulsed by the idea that her brother has chosen to spend time with Rhoda, especially over Mary, but Rhoda at all. She finds her to be like without a single good quality.
Any merit. No. Why do you think
Phyllis is an anti-Semite?
Why would she rent to Rhoda so long in her home? That's Phyllis's home. Rhoda has lived in Phyllis's home for years.
Right.
Why would she take her in? Why does she stay? I know it makes a good sitcom, but like to a degree, you're like, why did Rhoda stay with this woman who hates her? It's funny, but it's just like, I guess the rent's really good. Yeah. Up in that multicolored birdcage that, you know, that hat box that Rhoda lives in upstairs, which does not line up with the exterior of the building, but whatever.
No. I don't know. I struggle to think of another reason other than like raging anti-Semitism that
she's absolutely an anti-Semite. Like in this episode, it's like just with all her, you know, she's Scandinavian or Lars Lindstrom. She's clearly, you know, and they never say that Rhoda's Jewish. As we talked about earlier here when we were eating dinner, I don't think in my memory, even in Rhoda, they say they're Jewish, mm-hmm. even though they're so Jewish. And I think actually Valerie Harper is Italian.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Even though it was the most Jewish show that they never said anything about being a Jew on.
I mean, they still do that like 20 years later on Seinfeld. You could make the argument that the Costanzas are Jewish stereotype, but they just made them Italian rather than have them be Jewish.
Well, the same with Bea Arthur and Estelle Getty.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
a Jewish mom and mother daughter.
Oh, interesting.
Made into Italian. Italian was always more palatable, or seemingly so, to the, you know, the white mainstream American in the 60s and 70s. Arthur Fonzarelli, played by Henry Winkler, a Jew.
You could take a boat and like the Mediterranean's a very small area. It wouldn't take you very long to get from one place to the other, to be honest. Huh, that's a really interesting thing. Glenn, do you have any thoughts on Phyllis's anti-Semitism?
I am anti or anti.
Yeah, that's. I mean, we all are as much.
I don't know. I mean, I think it could be that. It could also just be Rhoda is everything that Phyllis isn't, and mm-hmm. she seems to be happy, and Phyllis does not seem to be happy, and she seems to have everything, but there's a sadness to her.
Get this: Valerie Harper has English, Irish, Scottish, Welsh, and French ancestry. She's not even Italian.
She's
a Harper.
I mean, Harper.
That sounds kind of waspy. Well, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting thinking about over the course of the first three seasons of Mary Tyler Moore, Rhoda goes from being a frumpy, sad person to a much brighter, vivacious, and like person who dresses as beautiful as she really is and like shows off her body a lot more and kind of benefits a lot from her friendship with Mary. Phyllis doesn't really learn a whole lot from people. And then her life takes a nosedive when she gets her spinoff. Lars dies and she has to move to San Francisco because she has no means of support, even though she still owns the house. I'm not really sure how that's worked out, but her and her daughter moved to San Francisco and she has to like start over from nothing.
Is Phyllis on Hulu?
I don't believe so.
I remember watching it somewhere recently. Some of them, maybe it was, anyway, I don't know. And on Phyllis, she lives with her in-law, those two really old people, and one of them died during the series.
A lot of people died. There was a
bloodbath.
Like, seriously, I think at least two elderly people died. And then one of the female cast members was murdered in Venice. She was leaving an acting workshop and she was shot to death.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So
I remember seeing that.
Phyllis, as a show, never recovered from just like the stigma of death. And it's not the most positive show in the world. We were talking, I will cut it into the episode right now because people need to know. The opening song to Phyllis is kind of sounds like Mary Tyler Moore, written in a minor key. And it's one of the most off-putting things you'll ever hear in your life.
Has a sassy end note.
Yeah, yeah.
With, it's really funny.
Cora's Legion makes a great face, but
she does. Google it.
So that's Phyllis. Phyllis is pissed, and there's nothing she can do about it. And the next time, is there any more in Phyllis's monologue scene that we need to talk about?
No, but she goes into it more in the next scene.
She's absolutely fantastic in it.
She has not recovered at all.
Also, what's strange is that's all the same day, which when you watch it, like, is this all the same day?
Yeah.
It's all the same day.
The next scene, it's some days later. I'm not sure how long Ben is staying in Minneapolis, but Rhoda's making him dinner and Mary's helping him do this because Rhoda only has like a hot plate. So she's like stirring things.
Chicken and mushrooms.
Yeah, chicken mushrooms. Doesn't sound like chicken mushrooms up there is the actual line, which is...
it doesn't make any sense.
She sells it though, because it's colorful.
She does.
She can make that work.
The other thing I wanted to get back to about her outfits is that after the concert when she comes in and Mary's in a bathrobe late at night, she's wearing her like ruffled death shroud, her black ruffled. Mm-hmm. She has a convenient, handy ruffled black death shroud to wear up to Mary's to signify her grief about
You don't think that was her concert look?
It's a little too perfect. I think Phyllis absolutely went home, changed out of her like, I don't know, mauve, purple, puce concert outfit that a boar would not wear, but she would. And she put on something just to denote to Mary that she was in mourning.
I agree. She's a big fan of changing outfits. She tries to get Mary to change an outfit, so she's wearing red rather than blue because Ben likes red. She's very pushy that way. She's wearing like we call it like a leisure suit like look in this with like a big collar on it, and she's trying to interfere.
Pantsuit.
She's trying to interfere with this whole meal preparation thing, and Rhoda is living for how uncomfortable it's making Phyllis to know that like this brother's spending all this time with her. She's like, calls her sis. The line is like delivered with like the perfect like twist of the knife. And she knows that it's hurting Phyllis, and Phyllis is trying to get beyond it. Does Rhoda know he's gay at this point?
I mean, I want to get into this when she reveals that he's gay
right
at the end.
Okay.
I want to discuss how long she knew that.
You want to get there? Because I have something to say about it.
I want to wait till we get to that.
Okay.
I don't know if there's anything more in this scene. It's just that Phyllis is having...
I want you to put in the dialogue where Phyllis discusses whether or not Rhoda's attractive.
Oh, right. She's like, is so it like funny.
That woman has cast some sort of spell over Ben.
No spell, Phyllis. It's just that in case you haven't noticed, Rhoda is very attractive.
Is she? Is she, Mary? It must be on some level that I can't perceive, like ultraviolet light. Or that whistle that only dogs can hear.
Is she? Rhoda's attractive.
Is she? She clearly doesn't get it. I mean,
I have said the same exact thing about so many of my, like, kind of friends when people start dating them.
Like, really?
No.
Yeah. No. Okay.
I'm sitting right here.
Yeah.
Really hurts.
Is he?
So Mary's hosting the party. She's dressed like a Chinese priestess or something. Like
that. What would you call that color? It's like somewhere between gray and lavender.
It's like a sad periwinkle.
I would call it aqua.
Is it? Yeah.
I would call it
aqua. Is it? Is she?
Aqua whisper.
Aqua Whisper's good.
Yeah.
With this big moth pendant. It's medallion.
Not a butterfly, a moth.
Not a butterfly. As Glenn and I both noted, it is a moth.
It's a weird outfit. All the men look like garbage in this whole episode. All the women look perfect except this one Mary outfit. It's just kind of weird.
Well, that's the other thing about that polyester. You have to be whisper slim like all those women, right, including Georgette. All the men is so unforgiving. It's like, right, if you have any chunks or curves, it is just like, that's another thing. Thinking of those like silky polyester disco shirts hanging out of fat man guts over polyester slacks. In the 70s, y'all didn't have to go through it, but I did, and clearly I still have PTSD about it.
You're making me glad I was an 80s child.
You're very lucky.
The party is off to as good a start as Mary could possibly hope for, but then Phyllis, draped in chocolate brown, just like looks, like wanders in, and she's almost looks like she's in like a gothic novel, and she's just like lost in the wilderness. And
Ben's hair is tied into a locket around her neck.
Yes. This is the tragedy that she's always worried about. And she tries to talk to Mary. Mary, she's like, Phil, I have like one party every few years. I don't have them that often.
I had one in a year and a half.
Please don't ruin it. And she proceeds to ruin the party. She's awful.
And she's so, I mean, she is such a classic, tired expression, but she's such a classic drama queen, Phyllis.
Yeah.
She just wants attention. She wants to wallow. She wants to bring everyone else down. She wants to make it all about her. It's like looking in a mirror for me.
I mean, in her defense, like, her brother comes to visit and he spends the entire time with a girl she hates.
That's true, yeah.
And like, yeah, and then he's gay and he's not even into her. Like, spend some time with your sister, bro.
Right. But it's Phyllis. Phyllis sucks. You wouldn't want to spend time with her.
I would want to spend time with Phyllis.
Oh, is it? We even talked about her weird mom.
But you know, it's different when someone's your sister or brother, as you well know. But like, it's also, you know, she does annoying things and the brother points it out and Phyllis says, I don't do that. Mother does that.
It's super interesting that she's like, doesn't seem to be understanding that like Mary's the one who points out. It's just like, you do this and you do this and you do this. And she's like, I don't do that. But you seem like, you know, my mother
My mother does that.
Yeah. So obviously this like gay boy who's had an overbearing mother wants nothing to do with this like duplication of his terrible mother. That's why he's going after Rhoda. And
the opposite.
The opposite. Phyllis. Yeah. And I like the scene where Phyllis is like clutching the banister at the bar and just like wanting for attention. And Georgette, who we haven't really talked about, she's played by Georgia Engel. She's the soft-spoken woman who was on Coach and was on Everyone's Raymond. She and Phyllis have never met before, apparently, even though this is like late season three, because Phyllis like asked her like, who are you? And she's like, oh, I'm here with Ted. She's not just a ditz. She reminds me of a space alien who thinks that she's like nailing her impression of a human, but like doesn't even understand what she's not doing right. She's just absolutely bizarre.
Again, have worked with and have lots of to say, and I will not say it on this mic.
She,
but she's a wonderful person.
The story of her.
She is Georgette. Anyway,
The story of her career is that Mary Tyler Moore in real life went to a production of House of Blue Leaves in LA. She was playing, I imagine she was playing like Bunny. And she was like, her. And it was like, hey, you should be on my show. You're amazing. Which is an awesome, like, she's always been on TV ever since.
You know, fun fact about her that I know that she told me is she still, at least up till like, this was, I worked with her, I think it was 2014. She still has the same apartment that she had in the 70s. She still has it.
Crazy.
In New York, in Manhattan.
Wow.
Rent control?
Yeah. That's, I mean, come on. One of those people. I'm sure it's like $1.98 a month. God bless. Good for her.
So Georgette tries to counsel Phyllis. It doesn't really work because Georgette doesn't understand anything.
Who are you?
I'm here with Ted.
Who are you here with?
I am alone. Waiting to see if my only brother is going to break my heart and throw away everything he struggled so hard for.
I hope he doesn't do that. Break your heart and throw away everything he struggled for.
Ben shows up at the party with Rhoda.
In red.
And this, like, a poncho or this, like, really great sort of, like, swingy jacket situation?
It's like a stringy thing. There's like a lot going on.
Yeah, is it a knit thing?
It has to be just for show. It's not giving her any warmth, really, because it's such an open weave.
It's almost like a macrame.
Yeah. So a macrame fell on her, and she came into the party anyway. And Phyllis's line is, to, like, make a proclamation to the party that she has to have words.
Hi, Mayor. Oh, boy, have we had a crazy day.
Rhoda!
I got a feeling we're going to have a crazy night, too.
I have to speak to you immediately. It's vital. The rest of you go on with your party. It's important to me. Rhoda?
You going to make me face her alone?
You bet.
She makes Rhoda tell her what's going on, and Rhoda's honest. She's like, nothing's happened. Everything's fine. And she's like, I don't believe you. Tell me what's happening. So Rhoda lies and says, like...
Well, she pushes her. She's pushing her. She's like, we're just having a good time. I'm being absolutely honest. She's like, I know you're trying to spare my feelings. You really have to tell me what's going on. And she pushes it and pushes it. And finally Rhoda says, okay, we're getting married tomorrow. We got engaged 2 minutes ago. And Phyllis buys it. She thinks it's real.
I imagine at this point Rhoda's trying to spare... If Rhoda knows, and I think she has to know at this point that Ben is gay, that she's trying to spare Phyllis's feelings and also trying not to out Ben to...
Well, protect his privacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's about Phyllis's feelings. I think it's mostly about, like,
But Ben. Then when she finally says, like, no, he's gay, and Phyllis is like, what? She's like, I thought you knew. She does say something like, I just thought you knew.
She absolutely did not think she knew from everything, like, from the way they played off each other to, like, the little... ribbing she did about calling her sis. Like, there's no way that Rhoda thought that Phyllis knew that her brother was gay. That's ridiculous.
It's a weird thing. So basically, Phyllis thinks that her brother is going to marry Rhoda. Phyllis breaks down at the party, starts crying. Phyllis fucking ends that party. Everyone leaves.
Okay, by the way, Mary's friends are dicks. Like, why would that end the party?
Yeah, exactly.
Mary's friends are dicks. Even Ben is a dick because his sister's crying and his response is like, I'm going to make her the biggest slow gin fizz she's ever seen. Not to, like, talk to her and be like, shut the fuck up or, like, leave the party with me. He leaves too.
He and Mary leave together to make the slow gin fizz.
Yeah, to leave Rhoda to have this conversation with Phyllis about, like, Ben's not my type. And Phyllis is appalled at this idea, and she's like, why? He's like, he's smart. He's, like, successful.
Phyllis, for heaven's sake, I can't believe you took me seriously.
What do you mean?
Phyllis, Ben and I aren't getting married. He's not my type.
What do you mean he's not your type? He's witty. He's attractive. He's successful. He's single. He's gay. He's what?
He's gay. I thought sure you knew, Phil. We're not getting married.
Oh, Rhoda, I'm so relieved.
If she was trying to protect his privacy, she still outed him to his sister when he obviously had never had that conversation with her. And she clearly didn't think that she knew, like you said. And
well, she kind of is like, I just figured you knew. Like, you know, yes, it's kind of a little bit ambiguous about what's going on.
Had she just been like, you know, like had it been more like, if you think about it, you know, he's gay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then
yeah.
It would have been one thing, but just, yeah.
They don't explore it any further. It's just the joke of then Phyllis totally doing the reversal and being like, oh, I'm so happy.
I'd rather have a gay brother than one that married a Jew.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, literally her anti-Semitism is greater than her homophobia,
which is, like, explains so much about current politics in America.
Yeah, actually.
Deep.
So this is why this episode, I was just why I want to do this episode, not just because I want to talk about Cloris Leachman a lot, because I love doing that, but, like, the entire episode leads up to this, like, surprise conclusion, which is, like, Ben is gay! And it resolves everything enough for Phyllis that the episode just ends. Like, 30 seconds after she finds out her brother's gay, you have the end credits. And then there's, like, a stinger at the end? What do you call it? An end credit scene where it's...
A tag. It's like they call it.
Tag. Thank you for the lingo, where they don't mention it again. And I don't believe they ever...
And she's got the giant slow gin fizz in her hand, the big red slow gin fizz.
So she's coping fine, but I don't think they even... The topic of homosexuality is ever even raised again on the entire series of Mary Tyler Moore. I could be wrong, but I think...
They might mention a gay person. I don't... I wish I knew it better to report back to you, but I don't know.
This is, as far as I know, the gay episode of Mary Tyler Moore.
Well, there's that one episode where one of her coworkers is fired for being gay.
Is it?
No.
Shut the fuck up, Glenn. You're a terrible person. He lies.
Mischief.
He, like, spreads false information.
He's a rascal.
I'm the devil.
You're fake news. Great. Yeah. Thanks for ruining America.
So It's weird thinking about the idea of, like, this character's surprise sexuality being so much that the entire plot could revolve around it, and that's payoff enough where people were... Because the audience reaction to finding out this news is, like, surprise laughter. They're just like, what? What an incredible truth. Who would have thought there was a person who was gay? What a weird thing. And that will never happen again. This is the only episode we're ever going to do where it's treated like this, where... The presence of a gay character is enough to be shocking, I guess.
Right, yeah. It's interesting. I'm of two minds. The one thing that's really great about it is, and when I only saw this for the first time like last year mm-hmm. on Hulu, mm-hmm. and I was so impressed by A, how, because it builds up to it. I know what it's about because I think it's in the log line on Hulu. Thanks, Hulu. So I'm like, how are they going to handle this? And how bad am I going to feel retroactively? It's like right. one of my favorite characters, Rhoda, going to be homophobic or Mary or whatever.
And you're Rhoda thinking, and Mary beat up a gay man for being
like,
gay.
Totally gay bash someone, right? Faggot on its gremlin car. So they like, but the way she's like, just tosses it off, like he has blue eyes or, you know, anything,
yeah.
he's gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, thank God. And then like, you know, and you can just feel that Rhoda and Valerie Harper's as cool and no one cares, you know.
Right.
And then that Phyllis is like, oh my God, that's so great. Mm-hmm. That was in 1973. If I had seen that when I was in 1973, I was in third grade, there, I'll say it. Please don't do the math. But if I had seen that, but I would have to have been alone, because if I had been with my family, I would have been too self-conscious and embarrassed and terrified. We all know what that would have felt mm-hmm. like.
Right.
As young gay boys. But if I had been alone and seen like it was not a big deal at all, it would have helped me tremendously. But because we didn't get CBS, I didn't see it. But it was just the toss aside because there were so many other gay things on TV, like that, you know, all the bad stereotypes, which we could list, you know, sadly, all day and all night.
Right.
Like the one episode of Beretta I saw with these big crazy drag queens where my mother finally said to me, do you know what a homosexual is?
Oh.
And I kind of didn't. And I said I did just because I didn't want to get into it. We were alone in the room, and my mother, these drag queens were running around on, or these trans, who knows what it was supposed to, quote unquote, be, on Beretta. I think it was Beretta, which is a cop show in the 70s mm-hmm. with Robert Blake. And my mother saying to me, do you know what homosexuals are? And I realize now, I think she was trying to, she probably had me figured out because two of her brothers were gay.
Trap you.
And I kind of did, but I didn't want to get into it with my mother. And I was just like, uh-huh. And we just kept on going. So mm-hmm. there were so many scary moments like that. But like this would have been just such a like, oh, look, it's nothing. It would have been it's right. so beautifully handled. At the same time, they don't explore it any further. But
right.
in a way, that's kind of amazing and fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, for the time. Yes.
For like, the time, I mean.
On Wikipedia, there is a chronological listing of American TV shows that have LGBT themed episodes.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating thing to look at before I got most ideas for this series. And
no, well done. It deserves its own podcast. I will be up in there.
It's like most of the shows that have gay themed episodes are dramas. Mostly like Beretta, mm-hmm. medical dramas where like an insane person is also gay. Like literally yeah. that is a description for an episode. It's rare to find any sitcoms that deal with LGBT themes and much less well. And then to have them earlier than this, it's really hard to find them. I don't think the yeah. listing goes into really into the 60s. I think it mostly starts in the 70s.
Well, there's an episode of I Love Lucy where her and Ethel kiss.
Fuck you. Shut the fuck up. Terrible that's, fucking person.
That's in your fantasies at night. Okay.
There's the All in the Family, the 1971 All in the Family, which, yeah, we will have talked about by the time this episode airs. But yeah.
It's earlier than I thought. And so that makes it kind of even more special than I thought.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've been watching, this is weird, All of Laughin' is on Amazon now.
Really?
Amazon Prime. And that was my favorite show as a toddler.
Okay.
Because before we moved to the house we lived in, we didn't have NBC anymore.
Right.
So it is, check it out. It is so many, Alan Sues, of course, is on it, who's wildly, I don't know if he was openly gay, but he's a very gay, flamboyant man. Mm-hmm. And then Henry Gibson, who I guess also is gay. I don't know if he's was actually gay. I think he was. But there's so many gay references and gay jokes that are not for 19, I'm watching season three now, and it's like 69-70. And it's none of it's that bad.
Hmm.
Like there's these jokes of like, Dick, this is so random, but I've been like flabbergasted every night of like how un-gay bashing it is and how just kind of like gays are people and the jokes happen sometimes. Like it's not as I mean, I'm sure there are people who are younger than me would have problems with it, but like Dick Martin and Dan Rowan, who are the hosts, these two straight men, and they're dressed like cowboys. And one goes like, this town isn't big enough for the both of us. Like they're squaring off to have a gun battle. Mm-hmm. And then the other one goes like, yes, and that's exactly why I buy the cutest little cottage out in the suburbs. And they put their hands together and walk off together. Just like little things like that. Because it's all blackouts and quick bits and everything. Yeah. Anyway.
That's not terrible.
And I watch it all the time as a toddler, and it's so much more gay than anyone gives it credit for. Like, and there's a couple of things that are like, ugh, like fag jokes, but it's mostly not that bad.
I want to jump into older stuff and find out where that gets us. I also kind of want to do, like, if we get tired of sitcoms for a while, I want to find like some of the absolute worst episodes of like Policewoman.
Where it was, like,
like find the most homophobic, like wrong-headed, like just inaccurate, boneheaded depictions of like any sort of queer content.
It's a gay criminal that punches boobs until they're flat.
Like, like literally.
Is that real? Probably. That's in your TV show that you would write, Glenn.
Glenn, stop writing TV shows.
The one that stands out to me, it was a movie called Freebie and the Bean with James Caan and I think Alan Arkin. It was about a cop buddy cop movie, but a drama with elements of comedy. They've played it all the time in the 70s. You know, they reran it on the Friday night movie. And the killer is a gay. It's one of those things of like, is he a gay guy? He dresses like a woman, but he's not a drag queen. But is he a transvestite? I forget what they call him. But like, he's a murderer. He's awful. And his death is ridiculously violent at the end when they finally catch him. And it's been pointed out before in the literature about how horrible this gay character is punished. And there's a few other things like that, too, in the 70s I can remember. Like Ode to Billy Joe, where he, like, has a gay experience. So that's why he jumps off the Tallahatchie Bridge. It's because he had a gay experience.
Wait, did the song come first or did the movie come first?
Song first.
So then they made the movie
later
to, like, flesh out the song.
Yes. There's a great story in this song.
It is a great story. I don't think
we were all riveted by that song. It was so mysterious because you never knew what it was. And the movie, you find out one version of it, but
he's gay, and that's why he jumps off the bridge?
I need to watch it again, but because I remember seeing the movie, and this part that happens where he gets raped, maybe, or he has a gay thing with this guy in this barn, but it's so dark and hard to follow when I was little that I still didn't get it then, and I only knew that that's what happened reading about it years later.
Okay.
But he does he kills himself, I guess.
Glenn doesn't, and this is not something we've discussed at length, but like Glenn doesn't know that I have a fascination with like Southern narrative songs that have like labyrinthine plots. Like The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia has like 12 characters, and Vicki Lawrence is a murderer at the end.
Harper Valley PTA.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like,
Ode to Billy Joe.
Drive in your car and listen and be like, okay, what's going to happen next? Oh, it's a surprise ending.
Yeah.
I don't get that in a song anymore. Yeah, they're really good, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I like that you like that.
Why don't you have a podcast about that too?
I have three podcasts.
Let's have a podcast about Glenn's shitty attitude.
I mean,
let's do a 12 episode podcast about Glenn's shitty attitude on this episode tonight.
That's
me and Drew talking about it.
Yeah.
Honk.
So, do you guys have any lasting thoughts about Mary Tyler Moore? Or gay.
I have no more thoughts about gay.
Or gay.
I have no gay thoughts.
I'm going to go back and watch the first three seasons on Hulu.
Yeah, they're super. It's such a rewarding. So it makes me feel so happy. And it's like, even though it takes place in Minneapolis and it's snowing for like half the show, it makes me feel warm inside. I like this universe to hang out in.
I urge whatever powers that be at Hulu to please put or MTM or whoever owns it to put the rest of the seasons on Hulu. And also I think the first two seasons of Rhoda are on there.
Mm-hmm.
Please put more. Also watch Rhoda Glenn, cause it's really satisfying. And
until Julie, she gets divorced and it becomes a
Oh, that's right. I stopped watching.
Yeah.
And David Groh, who is so sexy. He's so fucking sexy.
Yeah.
And there's the wedding and yeah, it's gets sad because they tried to, because I remember seeing it when I saw it on Hulu and reading about it again, like, you know, she ultimately, spoiler alert, gets married and then it doesn't work out. And just watching the episodes where their marriage is falling apart is so hard.
Right.
Because they just did it because I think that this could be not true, but I think the ratings went down once she was happily married.
Yeah.
And then they wanted to make her single again. And they also wanted to do that 70s thing of like, let's show in a sitcom the slow disintegration of a marriage, which is happening all over America anyway.
Right.
But it didn't quite. It's hard. You don't want to see them unhappy.
And then she hung out for a few years until Hogan's family happened. So, or Valerie's family. I'm sorry. Valerie.
Well, that was in the 80s, right?
Early 80s, right?
God, it was so good.
Mid
84?
Well, I would say 84, 85.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she was only on for like 2 years before they killed her off. So
that was tragic. Speaking of tragic.
So I'll point out that, like I said, Rhoda and Phyllis are both gone in a few episodes. So except for the fact that Betty White hasn't joined the cast yet, I think this episode might be the only time you see all those characters in one place because they're all at Mary's party. Like, oh, George wow. is there. Everyone yeah. but Gordy. Gordy's the only one who's not there that I can think of. And like Ed's wife isn't there and like Marie's not there. But like for the yeah. core cast, like they're all in one space. And I don't think it happens again until the series finale. But I don't think they all actually have a scene together. At the very end, they all come out and like everyone who was like a main character on the show takes a bow together. But that's not a real scene. I think this is the only actual scene where all those characters are in one place.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't think about that, but that, I guess that's true. Yeah. You know who else we just lost last month was Nanette Fabre, who played Mary's mother.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
She was like 99 or 98 or 99.
She was still alive?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Nanette Fabre. Yeah. Right?
Huh.
Yeah. Just yeah. died like last month, I think.
Yeah. Do you remember her aunt? It was like her Aunt Flo?
That's her period. Isn't that...
So, okay, I might cut this out if I'm completely misremembering it, but she has an aunt who I believe is named Aunt Flo, and she is an experienced journalist.
And she comes to town once a month?
She comes to town. She was going to, like, twice on the seven episodes of the show.
She's your doctor.
She, fuck you guys. No, she is, like, Mary's hero, because she got into
Rings
journalism
a bell.
Because of this aunt who's this, like, experienced and, like, a real newspaper reporter, and she has, like, a flirty relationship with Lou. Because they're both like seasoned journalists and they kind of have like war trench experience. And then when Lou Grant gets his spinoff and it's an hour long drama.
That was so weird. I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a drama about working at a newspaper. She's the only one who ever crossed back over.
Interesting.
They brought her back. But
who
like,
was the actor? Do you know?
Same actress. I don't remember what her name is, but I should look it up. But unless I'm mistaken, she's the only one of that entire universe. Four shows out of one, like in one universe. And she's the only one that ever came back.
Wow, interesting.
Sam, if people want to find you on social media, where do they look?
On Instagram, I'm the Sam Pancake, or the, however you want to say it. All one word, the Sam Pancake. And on Twitter, I'm J Sam Pancake. And then you can follow me on Facebook. And so I'm doing a show called Fritzy Zimmer and What's Left of Me, in which I play the world's oldest openly gay stand-up comedian and tap dancer. He's 88 years young. And he does a whole hour long cabaret show, and I'm doing it at the Celebration Theater in Hollywood on April 22nd, 29th, and 30th, and then again in June. But please come to the April shows, because if they do well, I'll really get to do it in June. And tickets are at thecelebrationtheater.com, or follow me on one of the on Instagram or something, and you can get links.
Cool.
And you two fuckers better be there. There, I said it.
I've seen a Fritzy Zimmer show. We saw
the, oh, you saw it.
We saw the
I was
that,
there too.
We saw the first one Tony was in, and then Tony, who was our Golden Girls guest, Tony played your nurse just recently, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Tony's in it too.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Tony's in the show.
Right.
He plays my nurse.
It's a very small world we live in right now.
He curses in Spanish at me.
And then if people want to listen to your podcast, it is
what's called The Gasp with Gio Andy and Sam Pancake. We're now Roz Dress for Less. My friend uses his drag name, The Gasp with Roz Dress for Less and Sam Pancake, and it's on iTunes and Podbean.com, where we talk about our lives and interview famous people.
And you just interviewed Kids in
Scott
the Hall.
Thompson.
Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall. And it was a very, very good conversation. If you want to know more about Kids in the Hall's world, listen to that episode of The Gasp. Glenn, where can people find you?
I mean, if they're so inclined.
I don't think they want to after like the terrible performance you turned out.
Robert Moore is not going to want to find you. He's mad at you now.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm on Instagram at Bros Quartz. That's B-R-O-S Quartz. It's a Steven Universe reference. And Twitter at I Write Wrongs, write with a W.
Cool. And you can find me on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and all the places you would find a podcast. Please give us a rate and review if you're interested. Please continue listening. We're going to be coming out with 10 episodes this first season. This is going to be episode 5. So there's 5 more coming out every Thursday from here on out. Looking forward to that. I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Thank you, Sam.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, here's the Gap.
Was it 30 June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Rhoda forgot plates.
Oh, how madcap of her.